It's time for another episode of the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast with your hosts, Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, Brad Tarver, and Jason Young. Wow, we've got a lot to talk about since it's been, a couple weeks since we met up, and there's been a lot of things that have happened over the last couple of weeks. So when Apple had their announcement for the new iPad, I think most of us were wrong with a lot of the things we were hoping for, but what do you guys think of the sixth generation iPad now that it supports the Pencil, now that they've dropped the cost of AppleCare, they're offering free 200 gigs of storage for students? What do you guys think?
I like the fact that they lowered the price, even though the price for us regular consumers is the same as far as the low end iPad. And I do like the fact that they've added the Pencil. You are getting what you pay for. You know, you sort of get half the iPad for half the price if you compare it to the iPad Pro. One of my concerns about it was it's definitely not the Pro at all, as far as it doesn't support the wide color gamut, and it doesn't do the True Tone, and it looks like the pixels aren't like on the screen, like actually on.
Yeah, you still have the air gap.
There's the air gap. So, but you know, if you're trying to deploy, say, 1,000 of them or 500 of them in a school, it's going to be the perfect device because it's got the power as far as being able to run apps and, you know, do the coding stuff that they're touting for the kids that want to do the STEM stuff. I think it's a nice offering.
I think, yeah, I mean, like Brad, it's not something that I'm excited about or that I would ever buy. I think it's good for Apple to continue to try to do better in that market, considering where they were, you know, 20, 30 years ago in that market, where they were a leader in that market. You know, they were big in education. I think their pricey ways kind of moved them out of education in kind of both ways, where back then all computers were expensive, so it really doesn't matter if it was a Mac or whatever. Nowadays, schools are having to get cheaper because they have less funding. And in general, you know, Apple products are more expensive than, I'm not going to call them knockoffs, but, you know, lesser versions of laptops, tablets, phone, you know, they'll run the gamut of any technology. Apple's going to sell, you know, the high end of that device.
To use the old 80s or 90s term, clones, when you had PC clones.
So, I mean, if it's a market segment that I think they have ignored over recently, and with the saturation of iPads, people aren't buying iPads like they were because, you know, they are nice devices and they last a long time. So it's not something, you know, that you just upgrade unless you're crazy people like us. So it's, you know, it's a market segment that they ignored, and now they're trying to get back in it. Because, quite frankly, they need to find some of those segments to, you know, to keep their ball rolling as far as, you know, profitability. Well, not profitability. They're always going to be profitable. They're high profitability. How about that?
I look at the four of us as very discerning Apple customers, right? We're not at that kind of entry point looking to get into the ecosystem. We're, you know, decades heavily invested into this stuff. I think
we're like, hey, the Mac Pros are $1,000 off.
right.
They're only 4,000. Go! I gotta go get one today.
What a steal!
I'm gonna get two.
Hey, I resemble that remark, but the point that I'm making is we've got to consider what a great device this is at an entry point of $329. Right, that's essentially 65% of the original cost of the original iPad. And this thing is so far beyond what the original iPad could do. I mean, Retina display, HD front-facing camera, HD rear-facing camera, new one supports Pencil, the quality of apps that you can run on this thing, the amount of power, and it's way more of a content creation device than the original iPads were. You know, they just didn't have the horsepower to do a ton of content creation. It was more of a consumption device. Now this could be kind of a 50-50. The multitasking that you can do that you couldn't do on original devices. So, you know, the four of us are kind of spoiled on the Pro line, and it is worth the extra money to me to have the Pro, but you know, I'm looking at kind of a young family of three. You know, they got one kid, and this is kind of a entry into the Apple ecosystem that, you know, a grade schooler could buy now in, you know, second grade. And effectively use it till sixth or seventh grade. So I think Apple's doing the right thing with creating a product that has a ton of horsepower, but is still at kind of a value price point.
So for me, I mean, granted, we're out of the four of us, only one of us has any kids in school. But what I've seen from more or less my wife's family when it comes to the state of computing and education, the big draw for using Google's stuff over, say, Apple's is the fact that you have access to the Google web app suite, the Google suite, right, of you know, your email, your word processing, the collaboration. At this point, I wonder if the smarter move would have just been to take the whole iWork suite, since we know that's not really a moneymaker for Apple. No one goes out and buys it, right? I mean, Microsoft is lucky because of the business market. They can still sell Office, but no one's selling word processors or spreadsheets anymore, right? That's almost like a commodity for most people, and Google has certainly made it that way with their apps. I think if they had just opened iWork to everyone, because, you know, the collaboration features in iWork, they've been there for a long time. They work really, really well. I don't know. It just seems like that would have been the smarter play. So regardless of the device that you have, I mean, if you look at Google's strategy, you don't have to use Chromebooks to be able to use Google Suite, right? You can use them on PCs. I just made my Google Home start talking to me. Its ears were burning. No, but I mean, they don't care how you consume it, right? You can do it on PCs. Like, to use an example, my niece, who has to use all this stuff, I don't think they have a Chromebook at all. They just use it through their school's labs that they already have, or their PC at home, or what have you. I think that would have been the smarter move for Apple. I mean, I'm glad they're giving the kids 200 gigs of storage. I think they should do that for everyone, not just them. And, you know, they announced some cool things, but I don't know. I'm not really excited by it, honestly, but I guess we're not the core audience, so it's fine, I suppose.
So what kind of technology is in that pencil that it costs one-third the price of an iPad? Because that price didn't drop. The pencil's still $99. I mean, what is in that pencil that makes it $99? It seems like to me that should at least drop to like $79 or something. I know they come out with the crayon, is that what they call it? And that's like a cheaper version.
So Logitech, yeah. Logitech had the $49 stylus called the Crayon, but the thing with the Crayon is that it doesn't do the pressure sensitive stylus. I think it's
it does Bluetooth tilt play. And yeah, a couple of the other gestures, but it doesn't do pressure.
And it does support palm rejection though.
The iPad does support this one. Does support palm rejection?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
So even though, I mean, it's $99, that in and of itself, I wouldn't think is really a requirement to be able to get the most out of that iPad.
I agree. I'm just, you know, just stating the obvious here is that the whole iPad with this nice Retina screen and an A10 processor and all the memory that's in there and the case and everything else is $329. And this, I mean, the pencil is plastic. It's $99. You know, what's inside there?
Well, I mean, it's a lot of sensors in the tip of it, and then, you know, some sort of accelerometer style device to, you know, detect if it's tilting and et cetera. I mean, there's
the temp is the most sensitive part.
At $99, it's one of the cheapest things that Apple sells that you can buy.
That's not a cable
that does something. Right, it's not a cable or a case. But then again, you don't have to have the pencil to be able to make the most of it. I think what's most disappointing about it is that the $99 rugged case is also made by Logitech. It's not made by Apple. And this iPad is lacking the keyboard connector or the accessory connector.
The smart connector,
the iPad Pro has. Yeah, the smart connector. There we go. So it's lacking that. So all of the keyboards have to use just normal Bluetooth with it. Kind of disappointing. I really wish Apple had done a $99 rugged case like Logitech.
Well, I know that they're trying to keep the prices low, you know, $300 or $329, and they still say it's a content creation device, which they're more kind of pointing at the A10 more than anything, but this is not going to be a something that you're going to make awesome movies with. I mean, the camera, the front-facing camera on it, I think is only 720, so it's still, you know, it's not going to be, you know, a 4K generation type device, a 4K video type generating device.
It's still plenty for FaceTime, though.
See, that's surprising, because I did not realize that the latest generation, the front-facing camera, was 720p. Wow, that's weird.
So the keyboard connector on the iPad Pro that we're talking about being missing from this one, has there ever been a second accessory of any type that uses that connector, or has it strictly been just for the keyboard? Because when this first came out on the original big 12.9-inch iPad Pro, I assumed this would be something that other people would be able to use, other companies would be able to use. And I don't, if I'm correct, I don't think anything else uses that but the Apple keyboard. All of the other keyboards that exist are all Bluetooth keyboards, right?
Correct, but unable to in order to use that those types of technologies, I think you end up having to license it from Apple. That may be the thing that dissuades people from doing it. Theoretically, nothing's stopping people from making accessories that would lend themselves to being able to use that connector.
Right. It's I'm just saying, how long we've had this connector on an iPad for that long, and nobody's using it for anything. I mean, it just seems, I don't know, just seems kind of weird. That strange, not weird, strange, whatever you want, just seems odd.
If I'm a vendor and I can make a keyboard that works across both Android and iPhone devices and only have, one product to bring to market, why limit my exposure to just an iPad only device?
And only one protocol to try to maintain, whereas if, you already know that all your previous, say, products support Bluetooth or USB, and then you've got to go and redesign and retool to support, one product that's only works over one protocol, which would be the smart connector.
Also, though, what does it really lend to have an accessory hooked to the iPad? Like, what are you going to do that for other than a keyboard in most cases? It already has a camera. You're using cloud-based storage for most of what you're trying to do. I don't know. Just I can see where the market hasn't been clamoring to fill that.
I think so. If it was like a Motorola, it'd probably have like a projector or something that you could connect to it. That'd be pretty neat.
That would be neat, though you'd have to assume that they would allow access to video and all that other stuff through the smart connector, which they probably wouldn't.
Yeah, I mean, I think like a 4K projector to where you could hook into that port, that'd be pretty cool.
Just rest the iPad on top of the projector or something.
Yep.
Just line up the connector.
Yeah, it doesn't even have to be exactly lined up, just almost lined up 4K projector.
You've seen those projectors do 720p that plug into the iPhone,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. I was looking at one of those short throw projectors before I got my big TV, but they're just not, I mean, the big TVs are like 4K ultra and the short throw projectors are still just HD, but they're really awesome looking.
They're 720p in a lot of cases. However, Jim, think about how much time you spend in a hotel and you could just project on one of those white walls in your hotel room, how awesome that would be.
Oh, I know. I was at a really nice Marriott in Stamford, Connecticut this week. And the TV in there wasn't even as big as the monitor I'm looking at right now. I'm just like, come on, people. This is a really nice hotel. You need to upgrade. Like, the LCD in there was maybe 32 inches, and it was probably like 2 inches thick. I don't even know how old that thing was, but it was crap.
No excuse for that with what they charge per night.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, this hotel had like $459 or something like that marked on the door, like that they could charge if they wanted, for this Marriott.
It's no Radisson.
Because, they're nice.
They are nice. So let's see what else is going on in Apple News. They are going on a hiring spree to improve Siri's smarts. So this is way overdue. But the coolest thing about this is that they've stolen away Google's AI chief, John, and I'm not sure I'm pronouncing this right, Gianandrea.
Good try.
John G, we're going to call him.
Hey, that's my brother.
So there was a site called ThinkNum, that has noticed that Apple has been on a Siri-related hiring spree, and they've had 161 positions listed as of March, and there was apparently a huge surge starting in about February of this year, and all of these positions almost are for engineers, and it looks like they're trying to tackle some of Siri's weaknesses, like in general knowledge and those types of things, and proactive intelligence. So here's hoping that in a year or two, this pays off. Obviously, we won't see anything in iOS 12, but one of the things that we complain about the most, it looks like they may be serious about doing this. And one of the things that came to mind is, like, when you hire away someone who's already solved this type of problem for another company, it's kind of like, why would they want to come and do that over here? And I think if you really enjoy what you do, doing it for Apple is going to be completely different than doing it for Google, in the sense that you have to keep the user's privacy at the forefront, which makes the job a lot more interesting and challenging. So here's hoping that pays off in another year or so. Man, that would be great to finally get some parity between the digital assistants.
I think that's the biggest problem with Siri. If you combined everything it did on every device, then you wouldn't have a too awful assistant. But there's some things that it does on one device and not on another that I think is a whole limit the whole ecosystem there.
That article that Gruber linked to a couple of months ago, where they talked about all the infighting and the rickety platform that Siri was built on, was a fascinating read. If you guys read it, it confirmed everything you ever suspected about.
Right. I mean, that was back into the forestall days, right? Where it was like, back when they were screwing up maps too.
Yep. I'm still waiting for that to end.
Well, this hire feels a little reminiscent of 2008, when Mark Papermaster was kind of lured away from IBM to come work on the chips at Apple. Apple had just acquired PA Semiconductor, and this was kind of their first foray into trying to develop their own chips and kind of be less reliant on Samsung and Arm and those guys. I really hope that this guy works out, because I'm trying to love Siri and it's just not working that great on the HomePod. So, something that kind of just baffled me just the other day is Formula One is a worldwide sport. I mean, it is popular on every continent. There are drivers represented from multiple countries and multiple continents around the world. And I asked Siri on the HomePod who won the Formula One race the day before, and it couldn't tell me. But I asked it on the phone and the watch, and it knew immediately. So I'm really kind of hoping that John G, as we're calling him, can come in and be that oversight that's needed to kind of have a very directed focus at improving Siri in the near future.
I think Papermaster was just a bad hire, right? Traditionally, Apple has gotten hardware right. They know how to do hardware. So eventually, they were going to get that right. And it's really worked out for them. If you look, I mean, their processors are great. They don't get enough credit for what they do in the area of CPUs. This is a much harder problem to solve. And on paper, if you wanted to solve this problem, the thing to do would be to hire the guy who's done so much for Google, who took them from being a search company to making them more of an AI company. So, I mean, if it's a bad move, it's a bad move. But at least on paper, it's the smartest thing. If I were a shareholder of Apple, I would be really happy by that announcement, because it's like, well, at least they're showing they're serious about it. They're showing that, you know, go out and get the guy who can solve this problem and who's done it before and make this go away.
So did y'all see the complaints about Siri and women's sports last week?
I missed that totally. What happened?
So the NCAA tournament for basketball tournament for women was played on last Sunday night, and Notre Dame played Mississippi State, and Mississippi State, I'm just going to point out, had a huge lead and blew the lead, and Notre Dame hit an amazing buzzer beater and won the national championship. Felt sorry for them girls from Mississippi. If you asked Siri about scores, like you would, you know, say something like, what was the Notre Dame basketball score? It wasn't smart enough to pick up that the Notre Dame men's team hadn't played in weeks, and it gave you like the last score from, you know, 3-4 weeks ago when they played, instead of giving you the women's national championship game from that night. And so a lot of people were complaining that, you know, hey, Siri is, you know, real biased toward men's sports and you really can't ask her about women's sports and she should have picked up on that. And I thought that was a stretch. See, now she's talking to me over here.
Case in point, Siri is stupid.
Yeah, so I thought that was kind of stupid. I mean, you know, it's, I don't know. I can understand. I saw this on Gruber's site, so if that tells you anything. But it's just I think one of his points was maybe not anybody who asked should have got the right answer, but you should be able to more of train it to, you know, I ask about this stuff and, you know, my spouse or son or whatever ask about this stuff. Like, you know, like if I ask about music, it knows something like about my musical taste versus if you ask about, you know, like somehow, you know, it understands that Jason likes motorsports and it should be able to answer, you know, Formula One questions, that kind of thing. I don't know. It seemed like one of those crazy complaints that really didn't have merit, that was just brought up because it's Apple and it's a quality and hey, you know, it should be able to do all of this. And you're right. It has nothing to do with the quality. It has to do with just Apple or Siri just being stupid compared to some of the other assistants that are out there now.
Mark my words, though, Apple will fix this.
Oh, they'll definitely fix that. But one of the things that I would like to see, and I know this is probably not practical, but one of the ways that I think that they could improve is when you have a query for Siri, being able to give feedback and say, no, that's not correct. Even if it can't give you the right answer, let them know in aggregate how often they're getting things wrong. Because you ask a question, you get an answer back, they have no way of knowing this is what you wanted. Like if you do a Google search and you find something and it comes back, if you go through 2 or 3 pages before you click anything, you click to a result, Google's going to see what you clicked away from off the basis of that search. They can constantly fine-tune things. It's a one-way conversation right now, right? You can't feed any data back when something is way, way off.
You should be able to go like, eh, like in Jeopardy, so it just knows that it was like the wrong answer.
Or tell her you're not mad, you're just disappointed.
the other night when I asked the Formula One question afterwards, said, Siri, why are you so dumb? And she responded, I was made this way.
Well, I guess we had in the time since we've been away, Tim Cook called for stronger privacy regulations following the Facebook data scandal. Wow, he got a few good shots in at Zuckerberg, man. That was pretty bad. They asked him, what would you do if you were in this situation? His answer, I would have never been in this situation. That was the drop the mic thug life answer right there.
That was certainly a thug life answer. I loved it.
So Apple just completely lucked into this 11.3, all this privacy stuff that they put into 11.3. They lucked into it because there's no way they could have planned that happened.
It's not that they lucked into this, it.
Well, they lucked into at the exact same time that Facebook fell.
Well,
you know,
it was just
flatter
sort of
on
right
their face
place at the right time.
Right. I mean,
right.
It's not like
they
their
fell harder.
Changed.
Facebook fell harder than they ever have in this area. At the same time, Apple released an update that, you know, it made a point to point that stuff out when you booted back into your phone about the privacy stuff. That was just
they could have changed nothing, awesome. But just stuck those screens in there, and it would have been hilarious just for the fun factor of it. But I mean, again, they didn't look into it. That's been their stance the whole time. They've been very consistent. They don't want your data. They don't need your data. Their revenue model doesn't depend on your data. So Zuckerberg tried to clap back and say, hey, you know, companies that charge you more don't necessarily care about you more. But honestly,
I love that article.
He is backpedaling hard. So, you know, you got to have revenue to exist as a company. Either you're getting it from your users or you're going to get it by charging your users. And even though he's not really wrong, I mean, there's nothing that would make Apple care about you. They just don't have a financial incentive to go after your data, right? They're already getting the money from you, whereas with companies like Google and Facebook, their entire model depends on data mining you so that they can make it what you want so that you'll be sticking around and not leaving. So I don't see how Zuckerberg, I mean, I realize he's the CEO, he's got to do what he's got to do to sort of to cover his butt. But let's be honest here, right? The even though Cook's business model won't reach as many people, I'm sure there's far more Facebook users than there are iPhone users. Probably not as much as it is as you would think, but they're not incentivized to do what Facebook and Google are doing. And you know, sometimes you just gotta take the L.
We'll have to get that article in the show notes, the one you linked to, where it talks about Zuckerberg making quotes about, you know, selling high priced items or, you know, to your users and customers and whatnot. And the way that article kind of finished up stating, look, you know, Facebook's customer is not us. Facebook's customer is people buying ads, and they are selling a high priced product to those people buying ads. That is their customer. They do sell a high priced product. It's just they're selling us to advertisers. We are the product.
Yeah, if you're not paying for something, you are the product. And that's the disingenuous part of this. This is like these cigarette companies in the 50s swearing that if you just have clean cigarettes, you won't get cancer. It must be the dirty filter that's giving you the horrible cancer. They are the cancer. They're peddling it.
Well, I see the irony from the movie The Social Network. One of the things that Zuckerberg's character talks about is, you know, he doesn't want to sell ads because ads are not cool, and all he wants to do is be cool. And now both Facebook and Instagram are nothing but just clobbered with ads. Like, I spend a decent amount of time on Instagram because I enjoy other people's photography, and, you know, I have hobbies that don't always get posted to Facebook or other places. And you know, that's kind of the medium that I like to consume. And it's like every third picture, now I have an ad. It's just terrible.
What annoys me, I love Instagram too. What annoys me more than even the ads is I just want a timeline that's a timeline. I don't want like some things move to the top, some things move to the bottom. Just
hey, they're bringing that back.
A chronological timeline, are they?
Yes.
See, that's great.
Yeah, I thought you knew. They're bringing that back, and they're getting rid of the auto refresh, which is the other thing that I hated so much.
Yeah, I want the chronological timeline back because I'm not a completionist when it comes to Twitter, because I never could be. But at least when I'm looking at Instagram, I want to be able to scroll through the photos. And then, you know, if I look at it again in 2 hours, I can kind of figure out, okay, where did I leave off, you know, and keep going through there. And with that timeline that adjusts all over the place, sometimes, you know, I end up seeing a photo from somebody from last night, and I'm just like, wow, my friend is drunk at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And you're like, no, it... That was from last night. Like, oh, okay.
Yeah, they're bringing that back, and that's an easy way to make people pretty happy. But So some of Apple's critics have pointed out that, you know, back in February, I guess, Apple gave the Chinese authorities access to the Chinese version of iCloud. They moved all that data back to China. But, you know, I would argue there that Apple does have to obey the laws of the country in which it operates, and China is just too big of a market to ignore. And plus, China's not being, I mean, Apple's not being disingenuous about what they've done. They're being very upfront about what they're doing, unlike Facebook, who's, you know, 87 million. We thought it was 50. No, it's really 87 million people that had their data sold to the analytics company. So, you know, at least they're not, Apple's being upfront about what they're having to do. And if you don't like it, you find it onerous, you don't have to use it.
Right. I mean, you do live in China. I mean, that's kind of one of the bad things about living in China. I mean, it, you know.
Apple, in the new version of Apple Music, has added a music videos section. Have you guys played with this yet?
Yeah, it's nice.
Isn't it great?
It is outstanding.
I have to think that that's made tailor-made for people of a certain age, because I have to think no one watches videos anymore. I mean, it's a rare thing. You don't. There's no venue normally to see them other than YouTube. And when you have to use Vivo through YouTube to see these things, they're so littered with ads that it really sucks. But it's nice to be able to go through into Apple Music and just make a playlist. And I can just sit there like Beavis or Butthead watching old music videos and just commenting.
That's exactly what I was going to reference, was watching Beavis and Butthead when you were, say, in, I don't know, 10th grade.
College.
I'm 42, so I would have been in the 10th grade or so whenever Beavis and Butthead were around. And I do remember, you know, watching music videos, like, you know, but pre then, you know, 6th grade, 5th grade, I remember seeing Poison and whatnot on MTV in the afternoons after school, and just being wide-eyed, you know, watching this stuff. I loved MTV when I was a teenager.
So I've watched some of the videos in Apple TV, but, and I haven't watched them on like real MTV in ages, but it was actually last Sunday. I got up and I knew the basketball was happening, you know, or Saturday or Sunday morning. I guess it was Saturday because it was the day of the finals. And so I was like trying to figure out when the basketball was coming on, and I'm flipping through the channels on DirecTV Now, and on MTV in there, it was like, I Love the 80s or something show. And so I clicked on that show, but it was one of the awesome videos from the 80s, and they just started playing, and I just left it on there. I just, like, it was like a marathon of these 30-minute shows about with the videos. I was just like, oh, God, this is so awesome. And, you know, just like playing music videos of all this music I loved.
Oh, I just loved 120 Minutes on MTV, and then Headbangers Ball on Saturday nights.
Oh, yeah.
You can make your own Headbangers Ball.
I have a Spotify playlist with the
120 minutes,
everything that was ever on that show. And I just hit spin on that every now and then, and it's just freaking awesome.
Well, I remember back in the day, my grandmother was the only one that had cable, and we'd find out when the world premiere video would come on, and I'd invite the kids from the neighborhood, because we grew up in a neighborhood that didn't have a lot of wealth by any means. So we'd invite the kids over and have a little world premiere video party and, you know, jam out to that.
It was Major Tom. That's what was playing when I flipped over to it, and I was just like, oh my God, this video is so, I mean, the production values of that video, I mean, the stuff that they did in those videos back then, I mean, those were, I mean, that was like serious stuff. I mean, they did music videos right. You know, it wasn't just like people standing around singing. I mean, this was crazy. It was like a 4-minute movie.
Well, don't revoke my man card for this comment, but have you watched any of the current Taylor Swift videos? I mean, those things are absolutely movie quality production. I mean, like, they even have full credits and they list who the, you know, producer was and the director. I mean, it is crazy what
she does
goes
spare
through.
No expense. She does spare no expense on those things. So,
dude, your man card was gone a long time ago, so don't have to worry about that.
So let's see. Safari 11.1, which shipped in iOS 11.3, has support for progressive web apps, which are really, really cool. They're apps that more closely resemble native apps. They can have up to 50 megabytes of storage. You get access to things like Apple Pay and some of the sensors and the camera, and it's actually pretty cool. You don't get access to everything. You can't use like Face ID and those types of things, but just having really rich web apps now on the phone is kind of a nice thing. I posted a couple of lists that I found off of, I think it was, I want to say Six Colors, that discussed this. Have you guys taken a look at them, played with them a little bit?
I looked at a couple of the apps, added a couple icons to my desktop, played a couple of the games just to kind of see how the games would play. And yeah, I mean, it's those are pretty sharp.
I liked the Airhorn app. I was hoping it was going to be the fa-fa-fa-fa-fa-fa, but it was just a normal air horn. So I was a little disappointed. There's a Flappy Bird clone on there that's pretty good.
We need to record you saying that, and instead of having an actual air horn button, it'll just be a button where when we hit it, it's you going, fa, 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 fa.
We do have the audio. I do have all the audio files from our previous episode, so I can make that sound clip, and we'll just have a soundboard. We'll just go complete hack, and we'll do it, but we will slide that in there every once in a while. Fa, 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 fa.
Can we hire a sound like engineer like while we're recording? You know, like he could adjust my volumes while we're recording instead of you having to do it after the fact.
We just don't have the budget for that.
Ah, damn.
We've been in the red forever. No, I do want to try this. And I think if you're looking at doing some app development, you wanted to play on the phone without the commitment to Xcode and all of that entails, it would be a nice
$99 a year and whatnot.
Yeah, just to publish an app. It's fun enough that you could play with this sort of thing. And if you have something that doesn't meet the content requirements of the app store that would get rejected, make it a progressive web app and you're doing pretty good.
I pay for that stuff and don't even develop just so I can get to the betas. Y'all do too, right?
I do. Even though they do the public betas one day after now, which is kind of like, I don't need to keep doing this, but I still do because of course I do.
I think my Apple developer, I think I just got an email that my Apple developer account expires in the next month or two. It's always right around WWDC.
I was going to say, mine always renews. Yep, I always see the charge right around WWDC. Well, you see it and you get all hyped up and amped up and it's like, oh, I'm going to go do it. And then you do it. I actually had the idea that I would go and I would play with some of the development and I don't know. I just have other things going on and I just never get around to it. So that's definitely on me. So let's see what else is going on. I know we were all disappointed when iOS 11.3 came out and we didn't have any sort of thing like, I don't know, AirPlay 2 or iMessage Sync, but that's all in iOS 11.4 beta until I guess they pull it.
Right. Well, it was in the 11.3 beta until actually 11.3 came out and then they're like, nope, no soup for you.
It's a really fine line that they walk, right? Because they will announce these things. I mean, if you think about it, iMessage Sync was announced at WWDC in June of 2017. Here we are, April of 2018, and we still don't have it. I don't want to pressure Apple. I don't want them to release something that sucks. But at the same time, I'm kind of thinking they should have just waited for iOS 12.
I'm thinking at the same time they just need to not announce stuff that they're not going to release.
I was going to say the cynic in me just says it'll be iOS 12.
Isn't this development cycle, though, the highest we've seen after any iOS release? Like, I don't recall any other iOS models going to a 0.4 or higher.
I don't think so. Not in a long time. I know we had seen several .3s. I know 10.3 was out by, like, December of the previous year, so I know that we've seen that. I don't think so. I think you may be right on that. We may have to do our double check after the fact by the time I get to editing.
It is surprising that, I mean, there's a 0.4 beta with WWDC only 2 months away. Like, if they would actually even say there's a 0.4 beta, you know.
The way they're going, I think there's going to have to be a 0.5 beta before the, you know, iOS 12 is released. I mean, we're still September, October release time frame guessing. So there's several iterations they could do to continue to improve between now and then.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. We could still conceivably be seeing betas when iOS 12 is announced. They could have two sets of betas. How strange would that be? I have a feeling that 11.4 is just mainly going to be AirPlay 2 and iMessage Sync. I would be surprised if it had much of anything else beyond that. I mean, what are we expecting that we haven't gotten?
I'm super shocked that AirPlay 2 is not out since we've had the HomePod for a couple of months now. Because that's what you have to have to be able to use two HomePods, right?
Yes, and it's in the betas right now. You can actually play with it, I'm told.
Speaking of HomePod and updates, I was very surprised at how large the download was for the 11.3 update for HomePod. It was like 2.3 or 2.4 gigabytes to download to run the HomePod.
Which is really weird considering there's no display, there's nothing like that. It's just basically a front end to Siri, so that's kind of strange too. Yeah, I thought the same thing. And I went ahead and turned off the automatic update so I could go ahead and push it on my schedule instead of theirs. Which is also weird, like with the TVs, with tvOS, you can say turn on automatic updates, but still go manually push an update if you'd like. With the HomePod, you had to turn off the automatic updating so that you could manually push it, and then you could turn it back on.
Yeah, I mean, was it like there's some AI in there or something that it's like be able to tell how tall your ceiling is and how far a wall is? Is that 2 gigs worth of code?
I think they just took the whole thing in there and said, just you guys deal with it. I think that's really what it is. It's just the same as you'd get on the iPhone with no differential update, just to throw the whole sack of bits right at it.
Maybe there's some blockchain up in there.
Ah, let's see. So one of the things that has been rumored is that the Apple Watch Series 4 is going to feature a redesign with longer battery life and a 15% larger display. I think that sounds great, but please, please don't break the band compatibility. I am way too deeply invested in this ecosystem to have to go and throw out all my bands. I kind of worry about that.
I would love to see that watch get to be, you know, 55 or 50 millimeters, so sort of like those jumbo diving watches. That would be so cool.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of large watches. I would probably be all in if there was like a 48 to 50.
I don't know. 42 seems rather large on one's wrist as it is.
I have dainty wrists, so.
You do. No, I you know, if it meant that the phone could break the dependence on, the, I mean, the watch could break the dependence on the phone, I think I'd be all for it. I really want to see that start happening pretty soon because the platform is really starting to suffer. Instagram took away their Apple Watch app this past week. Not that anyone used it. I mean, just squinting at your phone to see stuff from Instagram is lame, so I don't really mind it. But with everybody breaking all of their apps and removing them, it's not a good thing. Though they did end the watchOS 1 functionality, I mean the compatibility this past week. So I think that played a role in it. So maybe with the next iteration of the watch, you don't have to write things that are compatible with the first generation of watch. So maybe we'll start to see more advancements.
The only app that I use very regularly on my watch that's a true watch app is that Pokemon app. And it's not even that often that I use it. But if I go for a walk or something, I turn it on because you get credit for your whole walk in the game instead of having to have the app open on your phone the whole time. And it'll crash like 3 times in a 1-hour walk. It just crashes and you got to start it back up again. So that's kind of annoying. It seems like it was a lot more stable when the app first came out than it is now. And this week when I traveled to New York, I was on the ground for well over an hour and my phone still hadn't updated its time, which, as we all know, is the most important thing I use my watch for, is to tell time. And it messed up my train. I was like trying to catch trains from New York up to Stamford, and I kept looking at my phone and saying, okay, here's the schedule. I need to be here by here. And then I would look at my watch, and I had been up since 4 a.m. because I tried to fly out that morning and my flight got canceled because of snow. So I was exhausted. And it took me like about 6 times, I think, of looking back and forth here before I realized my watch was telling me that it was an hour earlier than my phone was with the schedule. And I'm like, what's going on here? So I turned my Bluetooth off on my phone, left it off for about 10 seconds and turned it back on. And when it synced back up with the watch, it immediately updated the time on the watch too. So
while that should never happen, when you fly, do you put your phone and your watch in airplane mode?
Just the phone. I don't ever touch the watch. I don't ever put the watch in airplane mode. If my watch can take a plane down, then we've got more things we need to worry about.
Tisk, 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 Jim. No, I've had that same issue happen with my Apple Watch as well. And I think the time updating, I'm going to say it's a function of the carrier that does that, I hope. Right, you're getting the time back from the tower, and the that's what makes the phone actually update. So maybe it could have just been an AT&T glitch that you were seeing. I don't know.
Verizon.
Oh, that's right. You're a Verizon guy.
And, I mean, my phone updated. My phone was on the right time. It's just the watch wasn't. That's what was weird. The phone updated, and the watch never updated.
I think we've established you have wonky Bluetooth juju that just destroys devices.
Yeah, I have like a Bluetooth canceling aura.
You really do bend spoons or some such in your spare time, I do believe. Maybe because I put my watch into airplane mode. I do that not really because I'm worried about taking down a plane. I usually do it for power conservation. I don't want it to sit there and try to talk to my phone when my phone's not on the internet and it can't get anywhere. So what's the point anyway? And I'm not listening to any music or do anything or getting notifications. So,
well, and you have a cellular watch now too. I don't have the cellular watch. So that makes a little more sense. I mean, I don't, maybe if I had cellular watch, I would put it into airplane mode, but I don't have a cellular watch. So that's why I've never worried with it. And I know there is a setting on there that where if you put your phone in airplane mode, it'll automatically put your watch in airplane mode. It's like a mirror phone setting or something, if I remember right.
That would be weird because you wouldn't be able to bring it out automatically because your phone wouldn't be talking to the watch, so it wouldn't know when you turned it off.
I don't know. I thought there was a mirror setting.
I thought it was displays that it did. Maybe it is. I don't know. I've never messed with it. I know if I sleep in my watch, I'll turn on theater mode on the watch, and I'll turn on airplane mode on the watch. So the watch, if I roll over, it's not turning on the display and turning off the notifications, since I don't want to hear them anyway while I'm sleeping. And then that way the alarm wakes me up, and it makes the battery last a lot longer for not having to do all that crap. So if you ever sleep in your watch, it's a good practice to use both the theater mode and the airplane mode, I think. I don't know where I found that from, but that was if you're not using like a sleep tracker or something like that.
Should I admit that I don't even know what theater mode is?
I just had to show someone this the other day while I was at the theater. It will turn your display off, basically. So you'll get notifications, and you can look at your watch, and it won't come on. You'll actually have to touch the crown to see what happened. So that's to keep from disturbing people. I just use it, like I say, when I sleep, because I don't want the display coming on if I'm not going to look at it.
I see. So it's like if you're in the theater, and you happen to just move your arm, and your watch detects that I should be showing you your screen. You don't want that bright watch screen popping up in the theater. That's...
Correct, and that was a function of WatchOS 4.
I was like, why is it called theater mode? And okay, that makes more sense. Because to me, that means like, when you say theater mode, I'm thinking full screen? What the hell is he doing? But okay, that makes sense.
Not like YouTube. No, not like YouTube. So kind of a neat thing. Well, that's a weird thing you found as well. And my Echo Dot just came on for a minute, turned its blue lights on, and turned them off.
I actually moved one of my Echoes today to my desk. I hooked it up to the Mackie speakers here on my desk, so I can talk to it to play music while I'm sitting here working instead of over where it was. I had these speakers in my bedroom here, and I moved them back out to my desk. So I just like being able to tell Spotify to start and stop and change the volume. And, you know, it's just a friend that I can talk to all day.
I think when they get around to making a smart speaker, you'll ditch your dots altogether. Ditch your dots.
Yeah, I probably would. You know, I think if Siri could do what it needs to do, I would love to have a HomePod. I mean, I think it, just for the sound alone, but right now this is cool.
I do AirPlay of Spotify to the HomePod. Sounds great. One of the things that I do get annoyed about, and I don't know if you've noticed this, Jason, I'll bet you have, is that you can't AirPlay from your Mac to the HomePod. That is the weirdest thing to me. Now, you can through iTunes. You can select that as a device through iTunes. But if you go up to the upper right-hand corner where you have your little AirPlay, you cannot select that as a device, which is really frustrating.
You think it's because it doesn't have a screen?
It should let you AirPlay at least audio. I mean, audio is, it should, whatever the device supports, it should let you do. I mean, I can.
It shows in my dropdown of audio output devices.
It does not show in mine right now when I'm going and I click on my little AirPlay icon. So when you click on your AirPlay icon, you see your HomePod?
So I'm not talking about AirPlay. I'm talking about, so I'm sitting in my iMac Pro right now. And I've just pulled down the volume bar, and you know my options are iMac Pro speakers, ATR USB microphone, my Klipsch monitors, Apple TVs, and then in there I see my HomePod.
I see it now as well.
The volume instead of the screen one. That's why I was saying, because there's no screen, it doesn't show up on that one, but it shows as an output device instead of...
instead of showing up on the thing that says AirPlay, which you would think.
Right.
AirPlay.
No, I agree with you.
Well,
because yeah,
that AirPlay icon is connected to your display's preferences.
It is, but at the same time, there's... So
AirPlay,
if it said the icon isn't necessarily display, the icon is AirPlay, right? That's the icon for AirPlay. If you want to AirPlay something, it's that.
Like, right, my point was is that if you go to the display preferences pref pane, that checkbox to show it in your menu bar is under there.
That's a good point.
Not
under
sound.
Just seems sort of crappy to do it that way. Like, I only think of the volume bar to turn up things up and down. I don't think of things normally of, oh, let me pick an alternate audio device from there.
Well, see, I do it all the time because, you know, with the podcast, I have to select the ATR USB microphone for the podcast. But at other times, I want to play through my Klipsch monitors, which are hooked up as USB devices. So that's kind of why they show up. It's not like a line out that I'm using.
Interesting. See, I just learned something.
And then also my Onkyo amp upstairs and my Denon amp downstairs are both AirPlay and Bluetooth. So, you know, if I want to play something in the house but use the iMac Pro as kind of the DJ box, I can, you know, I can send that audio out to the, you know, main home theater.
So this may be a silly question, but now that the latest macOS update has support for external GPUs, I know I'm not going to ask this of Jim and Brad. Brad might. I know Jim wouldn't. But Jason, would you consider with your new Mac Pro hooking an external GPU up to it and doing something really cool?
I don't know.
Making some Bitcoins.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that I have any kind of need that drives anything more than the video card that's already in this iMac Pro. And my MacBook Pro, I think, is one generation behind where it doesn't have a Thunderbolt 3. It's only got Thunderbolt 2. Uh-huh.
Oh, your Mac Pro.
No, my MacBook Pro.
Oh, MacBook Pro. My bad. When did you get your MacBook Pro?
It's a 2014 model.
Ah, yeah, you're still firmly in the Thunderbolt 2 camp. Same as me.
Yeah, so I could put one on my MacBook Pro, and I could make Bitcoin?
You can. Really? Actually, those darn Bitcoin miners are the reason those video cards are so expensive right now. I bought mine in 2016, and I think I paid for my GTX 1080. I paid like $700-$800, something like that. And it hasn't really gone down in price. I heard it even went up. I think our mutual Android friend, whom I saw in the gym today, Jason, told me that. And I'm thinking, why is something that's like nearly 2 years old still expensive? He's like, it's Bitcoin, stupid. That's what's driving all this. It's the people doing the mining that keep that demand so high that people can get away with charging that.
Did that cost about as much as the rest of your computer? I mean, was the GPU like half the price?
I think my i7 was actually the actual i7 processor was only about $300. So the video card by itself was over twice the cost of the GPU. But I mean, I think I spent like $3,500 on that Windows machine. I mean, it's a pretty nifty gaming station.
Hey, speaking of Intel processors, I was surprised to see that this wasn't in the show notes. Maybe we'll do a little more research and talk about it next week. But Intel announced their newest processors that are coming out very soon. There's going to be a new i9, and the i9 is actually like a 35 watt, which could be used in a Mac Mini. So there's big speculation that this year there will definitely be some kind of WWDC announcement or later announcement of a new Mac Mini that could have an i7 or i9 offering.
Quad core i9 or something, or a hex core.
Believe it when I see it. I don't, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty elusive at this point. I hope they do it. The problem that I have with this whole thing, and of course it was revealed this week that, I think Gurman or one of those folks leaked that, of course, Apple is going to be moving to its own proprietary chip design for future Macs as soon as maybe 2020. The reason I didn't link about that in the show notes is that right now it's just speculation. We all know that it's coming, but it seemed like it was too tenuous to really talk about. I would sooner bet that we would see something like that in, you'd see a chip like that in a Mac Mini refresh. I think the only speculation that I'm going to put here is that if they do move to their own proprietary chipset for Macs, I think you're going to see the refreshes be a lot more frequent than what we've seen with Intel, who broke their TikTok model and was, going so long in between releases that I'm going to blame Intel. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to blame Intel for the state of the Mac releases being so slow. Hopefully I'm right.
What you got, Brad? Wake up.
I was going to say there was a subreddit I was reading the other day. I think it was in the gaming subreddit, but they were talking about gaming rigs, and a guy had a video card went out, and he was wondering why the 1080s were so high. And there was a guy that brought up the fact that you could actually take your entire gaming rig into like a micro center and tell them that you're not trying to mine cryptocurrency, and they would give you not give it to you, but they would sell you like a 1080 at a more reasonable price instead of selling it to you at like full retail. But then somebody else debunked it and said they used to do that, but they're not allowed to do it anymore. So I don't know if that's legit or not, but it seems like it would be worth your time if you were actually going to build a gaming rig to go in and say, please, oh please, Mr. Micro Center.
You should have to buy like a case and everything else that goes with it. And then they'll sell you a GPU for like not marked up. Like if you buy all the other pieces to a gaming computer, we'll sell you a GPU that's not marked up.
Yeah, I think that would be a fair consideration. I built my nephew about a year and a half ago a clone of the box that I built. So part for part, we did the same thing. He accidentally broke off a USB port. I don't know how he did that, but he did. And it was causing a short in the motherboard. So he had to, he's in Cincinnati. I'm here. I can't really help from Atlanta. I did what I could over FaceTime. I figured out what the problem was. Just I couldn't tell him how to fix it. We disconnected it from the motherboard. So it should have fixed the problem. But for somehow, maybe he wasn't disconnecting the right cable. I don't know. He takes it into Micro Center, and he was like, all the people that work there wanted to see the computer. Like, he was sending me pictures and iMessage of, like, these nerds just sort of gather around. That's a nice machine you have there. Wow, that's really cool.
That's awesome.
And I'm like, you little 16-year-old, do you understand what Uncle Brian built you? He only builds the best. You have the best right here. This is why people are gathered around your computer. This is not some...
I built you a Ferrari, you little spoiled brat.
Pretty much. I built him a really good computer. So, and he has no idea what anything costs, so I don't know. Anywho, the last thing I had on the list this week... what are you going to say, Jim?
I was going to say, I need an Uncle Brian.
Uncle Brian did not foot the bill. Uncle Brian only flew to Cincinnati, took him to Micro Center, ran him around the store with a shopping cart, getting it saying, get this. And his mother, actually, that was a very nice Christmas present that she ended up buying him.
Ah, okay.
And then we spent the entire weekend putting it together, sort of having that bonding experience. And I hoped upon hope that that would turn him into a little computer nerd. But I think what we really built was a $3,500 Xbox for, it's not working, what do I do? It's like, all right, well, and I send him diagrams. I'll take the motherboard schematic and I would mark it up in Sketch and send it over iMessage. And I'm like, okay, so look here and pull this wire and do this. And I don't know. I've just, the force is not strong in this one. I like
to get a lot. Sound like he just needed to box it up and mail it to you and just mom could, you know, give you some cash to replace the MOBO or something.
Well, and what they ended up doing, I think, was they completely removed the parts from the case. Something was happening there that was still causing that to short out. I mean, I saw the error message he was getting. I Googled it. That was what the problem was. I thought disconnecting it from the motherboard. In all the years, in 20-some-odd years of using USB ports, I've never broken off a USB port. And he's, like, pulling back his headphones or whatever. Yeah, about a year ago, the little piece from the USB connector was in the headphone. And I'm like, how did that happen? And long story short, he blamed his mom. He said, the lights on the keyboard and the whatever were annoying her. So she went and took them out, but she bumped it and broke it off. I'm like, why were you plugging it in on the front of the case? Why didn't you plug it in on the back? And if the lights are a problem, go get yourself some black masking tape like I do and just put over the stuff so that the lights aren't visible. I don't know.
Hey, Brad, is that an iMac in a grocery bag behind you?
There's a grocery bag sitting beside it. I think the grocery bag has some tools in it. The iMac is broken. It's got a cracked screen, and there's something wrong with the EFI. I need to just go throw it in the garbage.
Where old Macs go to die. So the last thing I wanted to talk about this week was, of course, Apple now allows you to buy the coolest part of the iMac Pro without spending $5,000 or $4,000, as it were. And I am loving the space gray goodness. Ooh.
Boo. What idiot would do that? Boo. That's just stupid.
It's $20 awfully
premium.
Pretty.
What an... That just have to be a stupid person to want to go out and do that.
Now I'm typing on the same keyboard that peasants can purchase.
I mean, it's straight out of Star Trek. Now, if you just had like an LCARS interface on your Mac, man, you'd be straight out of Next Generation.
That would be the best. See, I showed restraint, I think, because I didn't buy two of the Space Gray keyboards and I have my work Mac that sits to the left of me, and my personal Mac is where I put this, and I still have the old white keyboard and the white Magic trackpad over there for that, and it was like I couldn't bring myself to do it, but it was kind of funny. I went to the Apple store. Well, first of all, I ordered the keyboard off the off Apple's website and got that because I was trying to be responsible and just not do it all. Like, do I really need them both? And of course, it's like, yeah, I need them both. So last Saturday morning, I was at the Apple store when they opened at Perimeter. It was the closest one to me that had the trackpad in stock. I go walking in. First of all, I hadn't been to that Apple store in a while. They moved it. So I go strolling in to where I think it's supposed to be, and it's like a Bed Bath & Beyond. No, it's a Bath & Body Works now. So I'm like, wait a minute, hold on. So I had to go and find it, and I find where they put it. They put it in a much bigger location. I go walking in, and they're not on the shelf. And it's like, but it shows it in the system like it's here. So I have to ask someone, and they're like, oh, yeah, just a second. And then they're like, well, no, we don't have any. It says, you know, we don't. I'm like, what? And then they had to go check on it, and they were all in the back. They hadn't unpacked them. So I was able to get it. The guy takes it. He's about to scan it. I snatch it out of his hands and use my iPhone to scan it. And he's like, oh, okay, it's like that. I'm like, it's like that. I scan it, and I'm on my way. And I was one very happy consumer last Saturday. So the set is complete.
You know, that's what happened with me when I bought my full Magic Keyboard with the keypad built in. When I went up there, because I had saw that they had just came out last year with the full one. And I went to the store, and I couldn't find them anywhere on the shelf. And I asked, and the guy was like, nah, dude, we just got those in. They're still in the back. Let me go get you one. You know, he was like so like impressed. He's like, yeah, we got them. We just hadn't put them out yet. I'll get you one. I think he was stoned.
Well, only the nerds come in asking for them, you know, before they even had time to hit the shelves.
Yeah, that's what was funny when, you know, the Apple store that I like to go to is the one up there in Jason's neck of the woods at Avalon and Alpharetta, and they didn't have any. We have five Apple stores, and every one of them by Saturday had some except Avalon, which wouldn't get them until midweek. So when I looked at it on Friday afternoon when I was planning my trip for Saturday morning, I think only Perimeter and Mall of Georgia had it. And by the time that I actually went, I think Cumberland had it, and maybe Lennox had it. Like, they had them throughout, but still, no Alpharetta. It was very, very disappointing, so I had to have a...
That sounds like an exciting Friday afternoon, Brian. Let me plan which Apple store I'm going to be at when it opens to get my magic trackpad.
And that's why we're on a podcast right there, because there's only the people that listen could appreciate that level of determined nerdery for doing something like that.
Okay. You got me.
I mean, this is not a story I can tell normal people, for God's sakes. Come on. They look at me like I was a crazy person.
They just say, there's more than one Apple store, huh?
That would be the answer they get. I don't know. They got another one now?
So this afternoon, I got back on Tinder. Like, my Tinder was always connected to my Facebook, and I had turned off all Facebook app this week, last week at some point. So today I finally went back. When I signed up for Tinder a couple years ago, it had to be you could only use a Facebook account to sign on, because the pictures you use on Tinder had to be Facebook pictures. That's kind of how they tried, you know, to police, you know, people using fake pictures and stuff, is you had to use a Facebook account. Well, at some point over the last 2 years, they obviously allowed you to start signing up with an email, because that's what I did today. So I'm, you know, I'm doing the swiping of the right. I got a match, and, you know, you just send, you know, stupid messages. I know y'all are all married, but, you know, just basically, hi, you know, how's your, you know, Friday Eve, blah, blah, blah. You know, and so you're going back and forth. She's like, you know, are you doing anything exciting tonight? And so I let the cat out the bag. I said, yeah, I recorded a podcast with three of my friends about Apple and tech, and so we're doing that tonight. You know, most people won't think that's exciting, but I do. And the reply I got back was, oh, that's cute. And I was like, oh, that one's done.
cute means you've already been friend zoned.
Wow. Oh, she pats you on the head. Oh, you little adorable computer nerd.
Oh, you little we'll neckbeard.
Yeah, there you go, basement dweller.
We'll see.
Well, that should do her for this week. Do you guys have anything you want to mention before we go? I mean, it's been a couple of weeks, and I think we're probably going to switch to a probably every other week schedule for the time being. You know, anytime between June and the time the new iPhone comes out, there's a lot of Apple news. It's really a vibrant time, so we may switch back later on in the year. But we are in the doldrums right now, where there's just not a lot going on, and with our schedules being kind of busy and being what they are, it may make sense to switch to every week and a half. If we get listener feedback that says, hey, don't do that, then maybe we'll reconsider, but otherwise, we're probably going to do that. So that was what I wanted to add, but what about you guys? Anything you want to mention before we go?
Shoot on over to iTunes and give us a good rating. Give us some feedback.
Yeah, we have gotten some nice feedback lately, so thanks for the stuff that we've seen lately. We appreciate that.
I want to give out a shout out to my buddy Rodney, who lives in Thailand, who I was talking to him a couple of days ago, and he mentioned that he listened to the latest episode of the podcast on his last flight. He works for an American company in Thailand, and so he was here for work for a week or so, and he was flying back home last week, and he's like, yeah, listen to the podcast on the plane on the flight back. So hey, that's kind of cool.
It is sort of neat when I look at the analytics. I mean, we do have listeners all over the world, and apparently have a lot of listeners in the UK. I really appreciate that. Australia, we have them all over. As I mentioned earlier, we have listeners in China. So I see all of you. I know that you're out there. So it's really cool that we have people that we reach all over the world. That's really kind of neat. I like that a lot. Anything from you, Jason?
Konnichiwa.
Nope, I'm all set for this week.
Well, good deal. So until we speak again, have yourselves a good week, and later, fellas.
Later,
later, fellas. Later, fellas.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. Follow us on Twitter. We're at infinloopback. That's at I-N-F-I-N loopback. I'm Brian B. That's at B-R-I-A-N-B. Jim is at Big Jim. That's at B-I-G-J-I-M. Jason is at J-S-N-Y-N-G. That's at J-S-N-Y-N-G. And Brad is at Meester Idol. That's at M-E-E-S-T-E-R-I-D-L-E. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.